Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. Now, you guys have heard me talk about these sheets before. Guys, they're sheets. They have self-cooling properties for better quality sleep. And they were inspired by NASA. So they have all these like fancy thermoregulating qualities because they're all technology and stuff. And honestly, like, I feel like I spent so much of my life just buying the crappiest sheets. And when you find sheets that feel delightful, that's something you hang on to. You know what I mean? You just hang on to that. I mentioned they're self-cooling. They're also self-cleaning. They prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth, leaving them staying cleaner and fresher 3 times longer than the average sheets. I can totally attest to that. Like I said, they're super comfortable. They feel luxurious, like nicer than sheets they use in 5-star hotels. For real. They're designed for your skin. And because of the bacteria thing, it doesn't cause breakouts and stuff, which is like actually a big issue for my husband. His face is very sensitive to that. And I'll tell you, these pillowcases have been doing wonders on his face. So go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to get Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use the promo code FAKETHENATION at checkout, then you'll receive 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. It's an incredible deal. And Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. So upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation. Treat yourself. And thanks so much to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 225.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we turn ourselves into nuts, take gigantic swigs of ashwagandha, and aggressively snuggle with the dog in an attempt to let democracy take the minute it needs to get fucking tabulated. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and in the past 3 hours, I've eaten all of the carbs. Today, we're going to talk about the pile of uncertainty that is the American elections, and I don't even know what we'll say. And finally, we'll talk about a list, our personal list of feel-good movies, because we really deserve to feel good. Today, I'm joined by such a fantastic panel. Folks, I can't even with this panel. We have, for the very first time on the show, President of Community Change. He's the co-host of System Check. He is, by all accounts, a delightful human being. It is Dorian Warren. Hey, Dorian.
Hi, Nagin. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure and honor to be here.
And we also have with us for the very first time on the show, but not for the first time with me. We've worked together many a time. She is the host of Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. You can go to paulapoundstone.com and see, get a bunch of like free entertainment situations. She's so funny. You've heard her on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me over these many years. You've heard her with me on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, unless you specifically boycott episodes that I'm on. And oh my God, I've seen her just kill on stage. She's just so funny. Folks, it's Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Nagin, thanks so much for having me. I need the healing. Frankly, I need the healing.
Let's see what we can do. I mean, okay, so let's get into it with topic number one. Now, I don't even know how to start talking about this. It's so totally uncertain as we go into taping today. It's Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. So forgive us for whatever we say that is inaccurate or whatever feelings we have that are crazy pants. I have only crazy pants feelings, but also which include the entire spectrum. There's also good feelings.
I don't have any good feelings.
Okay.
I just want to clear that up. That's fine for you. There's an inaccuracy right there, and I don't give a shit what day it is. I don't have any good feelings.
Okay,
it's just been too much. There's too many lies.
Too many things. All right. So here's. Let's just quickly. Where are we at, Dorian? Where are we at right now? 1:30 p.m. on a Wednesday of November 5th.
So, Nagin, two things. One is I'm actually confident and optimistic. The will of the people is very clear. We have chosen new leaders, we'll demand that every vote is counted, and we will swear in a government by and for the people. There's no question about that. There are still several states where the counts are happening. And, you know, there's two strategies here. Our voters, progressive voters, turned out in record numbers. The one strategy of Trump and the Republican Party is to suppress the vote. They tried to do that by law before the election. Sure. He is doing that now and stoking uncertainty and trying to delegitimize the election because he knows he's losing. It's actually from a position of weakness that he's operating. And so what you hear is contradictory things from the Trump campaign. Oh, we want to recount in Wisconsin because we think we're losing, but stop counting the votes in Pennsylvania. We're going to go to court and because we're worried about those votes. So this is, in some ways, people have been hearkening back to the year 2000. For those of us old enough to remember staying up all night then, this is a replay. And let me remind you, just to scare you a little bit, then I'll move back to optimism. The three Supreme Court justices that President Trump appointed, each, all three of them were involved in the 2000 Florida debacle. Let's be super clear for the Republicans to steal that election. That was a stolen election.
Sure.
So people are fired up to fight to make sure that every vote counts because we are confident that we have won this election.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so Dorian,
I just want to say one thing. He's out of his mind. He began what he was saying with, "I'm optimistic." Where'd you get this guy?
I'm optimistic.
I almost interrupted right when you said, "I'm optimistic." I'm like, this guy's fucked. Why is he talking?
I mean, Paula, you know what's really funny is I am currently, I don't know if you can see it, I'm wearing the official Fake the Nation merch. It says we're only doing optimism. And so Dorian is of my ilk. We didn't know, but we are brother and sister in optimistic outlooks. That said, you know what I think is funny though, Dorian, is that even though we knew that there was going to be challenges, he told us the whole playbook, he didn't hide it anywhere.
We knew this was coming.
We knew that it could take a minute. Why? Yes. We're in a pandemic. Why? We're getting historic mail-in ballots. We knew. And yet, Paula, why do I still feel so miserable even though I knew? I'm optimistic yet miserable. And I think both of those things can coexist. Paula, tell me where you're at and how you're feeling right now.
Okay. Well, I think that Dorian is right. And I think it should just all boil down. And I don't know if we can do this with the Constitution, but just to whatever Dorian says.
You're too kind, Paula.
Is that too out there? I don't think
so.
No,
I think that's about right.
He seems so reasonable. No, I think Dorian's right. I think, you know, if all the votes get counted, yes, Biden will win. But here's the part that had me just, like, eventually, I just felt like my spirit was pouring out of my body and over the edge of my Adirondack chair in my living room while I was watching last night, is how, I had much more optimism going in, and that's been slapped out of me now, but going in for the senatorial races, and B, a lot of people voted for this guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, no matter how you slice it, I really, you know, I can't believe, you know, James Carville on one of the podcasts that I really am comforted by, the I can't remember the name of it, but it's like War Room something, but it's Al Hunt and James Carville, and it's really fun to listen to. But James Carville kept saying, you know, we're gonna win in a landslide. It's gonna be a landslide. He said it over and over again. Then of course I look on my email one night right after listening to him, and there's one of those give us money emails, and it was written by supposedly by James Carville. So it says, you know, it says James Carville on the name thing. And then in the subject line, it goes, we're screwed. So, they do this thing where they take it for this ride. But I had really anticipated a bigger margin. I still think he'll win, but I had anticipated a bigger margin. And I think I just feel like, you know, America, I don't know you. I thought I did.
Oh, I know America. I'm not surprised at all.
We're gonna talk about America in just a second, but I also want to point out that in 2018, at probably around this time, the day after, we thought we had some sort of a, I don't exactly remember, so I'm talking to Adam a dick here, but like, we thought we had some sort of a lead, right, in the House, but the extent of our majority in the House wasn't clear. It wasn't clear for days. Am I remembering this correctly? Mm-hmm. So there's a thing that we still have to understand, which is that vote tabulations don't happen simultaneously. They just don't. Yeah. And I don't, yes. It's funny because I think in the 1800s, we probably knew. I even think in the early part of the 1900s, we probably knew there was a fucking guy on a horse that ran around telling us things. So it took time. And then now
fake horse. That's what they used to yell. fake horse. That's not true. What he said wasn't true. Yeah. No, you're right. I don't mind
waiting.
So I think
we just need to wait. I don't have a problem with waiting. And Georgia might even have runoff elections, you know, for the Senate. We need to wait. Dorian, tell us what you know about America.
Well, you know, listen, I'm a black guy from Southside Chicago. And here's what I know about America as a black person. None of this is surprising. So when I woke up in 2016, the day after the election, I wasn't surprised. I'm not surprised now. And a lot of us thought that it would be this messy right now. Mm-hmm. Paula, you're right. You didn't think it would be so close in the Electoral College that was set up to protect slaveholding interest. The popular vote is a different story. It's going to be 3 to 7 million advantage of votes for Biden-Harris. And much more than, remember Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. Remember Al Gore won the popular vote. This is going to be the largest margin. So I'm not surprised, because there are echoes of voter suppression that take me back to Reconstruction, to the end of Reconstruction, to the rise of Jim Crow in the South when black people first had a chance to vote. And what is fundamental always about this country is a fight over who belongs and who doesn't, and therefore who has a voice. And if black votes in particular were not threatening to the current system and to this administration, there would not be an effort to cancel black votes as we speak in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan. And that's why black voters showed up and voted overwhelmingly, right, for Biden-Harris, because we understand the historical context of this country and how hard, right? We didn't become a true democracy until 1965 with the Voting Rights Act. That's the first time we became an actual democracy. It's actually a very young democracy we have here in terms of including all of the people, So I am not surprised. I'm angry. I'm filled with rage, but I'm also optimistic because we actually have momentum, and victories aren't only on election cycles. Wins aren't only in election cycles. Now, yes, everything was at stake on the ballot. The future of our planet, which is on fucking fire.
Well, that's the other
problem. On the ballot. But also, let me just say, white supremacy was on the ballot. And patriarchy was on the ballot. And yes, a whole bunch of white folks, a majority of white folks voted for that. And that is disappointing to me.
It's extremely disappointing. And I just want to say, what else was on the ballot that maybe, just if I wanted to put myself in the shoes of a Trump voter and humanize them for a moment, I agree with you that those things are on the ballot. And I would say that it's reasonable to look at that as a black and white. If you are voting in favor of someone who is who's a white supremacist, I reject your ideology. But I think the thing I don't think they're necessarily voting on that. I think there are some things that people are voting on that we don't necessarily feel in blue state America, which is abortion. Now, if there's a single issue that I'm going to vote on in an election, for me, it's 100% not abortion. It's like a very big issue for me. I'm a woman. I'd like to be able to have control of my own body, obviously. However, that's not my single issue. I think we underestimate the extent to which that is a single issue, especially for evangelical voters, especially when the Trump administration targeted Latino evangelical votes in the way that they did. That's something that they can always win on, because that thing terrifies those voters. And it is something that they've... Now, look, to me, like, if I'm a rational evangelical voter, I would say abortion, children in cages, right? And right, I would say, right. Well, I think children in cages washes out the... Mm-hmm. But that's... Look, but the, I'm not... I don't know. I don't know how they feel. I don't know what it's like to live in that in that body. So I think we're underestimating abortion. And then I think the other thing we're underestimating... I was talking to a friend of mine who's from Colorado. She grew up in a rural area. She knows a lot of these voters. In fact, she's deeply, deeply connected to them, though she lives in New York City now. And is very much a liberal voter, but one thing that the myth of the Democratic Party in a lot of those circles is that they're coming for my property. They're coming for my guns and they're coming for my property and they're turning us into Venezuela. Like that, if I think that perception has been really heavily promoted in a way that we don't understand because we know as Democratic voters that it's ridiculous. No one is coming for my property. You know what I mean? Like, well, no matter who's in office, they're not coming for my property. And this isn't, we're not turning into Venezuela. And I think those are two things that we're not necessarily like able to fully feel because we're not in those circles.
All right. I'm gonna say something that I have thought for a long time, and I wouldn't say it out loud because I was waiting to be on Fake the Nation. But a lot of the problem is religion. And I grew up raised in the Methodist Church. I was even a bit of a Bible thumper. Certainly through my freshman year in high school, maybe a little bit longer. But I've been a proud atheist for many, many years now. The idea of God, I never want to take away from someone else what they believe. But here's the problem. The idea of God makes no sense. And people tend to. I mean, I love a lot of the tenets that come from religion. I think they're great. Sure. The problem, and I live by some of them, or I try to, but the problem is that people, they mix and match. They, this day thou shalt not kill, and the next day maybe thou shall a little bit kill. I saw a tweet last night that actually said, God wants Trump to be president. And I just think, the whole God's will thing is like a get out of jail card, like a free get out. It seems, and the God's will thing seems to blur the lines of personal responsibility at the very best. And at the worst, it kind of fucks with one's daily agenda, I would think. Because do you say to yourself, I'm going to get up at 6 a.m, or do you say, I'm going to see... If it's God's will, I'll get up. Kids, we're going to have breakfast, but I'm waiting for what the guy with the big beard says. I feel like people do this thing where, it's what God wants, as if God's actually whispering in their ear, and it screws us up.
Look, I think what's interesting is, I don't know where you are, Dorian, on religion, but I'm a...
Shit, is that a white collar I see on you, Nikki? Oh, my God.
That's definitely not.
I'm part of the clergy, is what you didn't know about me. I'm a secular muzz, right? Like, and for me to hear an atheist be like, God doesn't make sense, doesn't offend me, I don't care, that's cool, whatever you're thinking is cool. One of my best friends was an evangelical Christian. Now she's maybe, I don't know if she still considers herself evangelical, but very strongly Christian, and it's cool. Like, we disagree on abortion. She doesn't vote on abortion, though, right? So, like, it's like I know Christians who are just, who aren't, thinking and voting in the way that you might, that your description of the sort of God that might be nonsensical to you. You know what I mean? So I don't want to put everyone in a bucket, like, whatever. Do think all of your things. That's cool. I think one thing, I do think the abortion thing is tough because the Democratic Party is pro-choice and that's important. I think the other stuff is where we can still win this, I still think we can win the ideological race. Because the other stuff is maybe more just reasonable. Dorian, what do you think when it comes to America?
there's so many different faith traditions in this country. But so I was raised Christian, and the Jesus Christ that I understood and knew and learned about was a pretty radical political organizer and philosopher.
Right, true.
So yeah. There's partly an interpretation battle, but even let's just take the abortion, right? For people that care about life, a whole bunch of folks went to the polls and voted for a president who not only was impeached 10 months ago by the House of Representatives, but who has presided over 250,000 deaths of Americans with a shrug. So either you're pro-life or you're not. So get the fuck out of here with this pro-life shit, because you're not pro-life, right? You're not pro-life. 200, this is mass death by public policy. And it's too many Americans decided to abandon their so-called Christian values or religious values to accept some kind of death over the unseen, right? And so, like, and I have to believe many people who voted for Trump have gotten sick in the middle of a pandemic or have lost family members. And I guess the question is, what planet are they living on where hating somebody else is worth your own death? Mm. That's absurd to me. There is no religion that can explain that. The fact that you hate people that don't look like you, and so you're going to vote for someone who will lead you to political suicide, that is baffling to me.
Yeah, it really. I mean, one of my best friends is Indian, and his mom, and you know, and he's also gay, and his mom is Indian, and came here as a, you know, escaped a patriarchal situation that was dangerous for her and the kid. You know, came to this country, found a good life, the American dream, etc., and is and voted for Trump. And she's a wonderful woman, you know. And I don't know. And I've known her for so many years. Like, I've grown up with this woman, and she's a wonderful woman, and she's Indian, and not someone, you know, it's like the mere look of her as an immigrant is what's maybe fearful for some people. And it's baffling. I mean, I think she would say that he's a businessman and all that stuff. I mean, obviously his tax returns and everything have discounted all of those arguments. Exactly.
Right. I mean, that's been disproven so many times.
I mean,
remember when Reagan did the are you better off, you know,
than you were four years ago, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like that sort of the ghost of that gets, you know, keeps sort of hovering over us. And I would say, in response to his question, define better off. You know, because I also feel like we are suffering from a pandemic that had gone undiagnosed prior to the one that we have. So I think we have more than one pandemic. And the first one that we're really ailing from is the pandemic of greed and denial. And in this case, it is a comorbidity. With, you know, like, because of, I think people think to themselves, like when you go to a casino, you see all these people in windbreakers and kind of trucker hats that won't leave the, that won't get
the
away
table.
From the machines, right? They're, you know, they're there, and it's one of the, you know, it's one of the first things that came back, of course, was, oh, we got to be able to gamble. And these are not, they don't look to the naked eye anyways, like rich people. It looks like people who probably worked hard for, you know, every
regular people,
buck they're putting into that machine. But this idea that I might get rich is so powerful that people want to see Trump and they go, okay, I might be able to do what he did. Well, it reminds me of when Radiohead gave away their music. And said, just donate, you know, just not donate. They said, just pay what you think it's worth. And I heard some guy on like a business show say that some musician had asked him how he could do that same model. And the guy said, well, first of all, you have to be Radiohead. So here, poor people who want to be rich is why you won't be able to do what Donald Trump did, because here's how the story has to begin. Your father has to give you a kajillion dollars. That's how you have to start out, right? So if that didn't happen, then you're not going to do what Donald Trump did. He cheated and lied. And
Donald Trump didn't do what Donald Trump claims he did, right?
Well, precisely.
Like, he was a failure. So it's all smoke and mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
I Doreen, I would like to kind of give our listeners, look, we don't know what's...
Don't you start talking about that optimism again. That's what's fucking us up.
I guess, what should we do now? Like, what should we do now?
We should be demanding that every vote counts. This is where we are right now in this moment as we are talking to each other. We have to demand that all the votes are counted. And that does come from optimism because I do know that we have won this election, that the people have spoken, and in a democracy, the will of the people is supposed to rule. So we have to make sure the vote is counted. We also have to be prepared to maybe go outside and show up to a protest or a rally when Trump and his henchmen start their shenanigans.
In a loving and nonviolent way.
In a loving and nonviolent way, of course. Whether it's like a candlelight vigil, whatever, but be ready to take action. Because the thing about democracy is it's not just once every 2 or 4 years where you show up in the voting booths and you go home. No. So we have to be prepared to act and stay engaged. And by the way, when Biden and Harris are sworn in January, we also have to be prepared to act.
Yeah.
We also have to be prepared.
Yeah.
It does not end. We have to push them too. And we were looking at probably a divided Congress, by the way. So the Senate will probably stay in Republican hands. The House will stay in Democratic hands. It's going to be hard to govern because you're going to have Mitch McConnell, Moscow Mitch, who's going to be still up there blocking everything that the next administration wants to do. So it's going to require us to stay. Oh, I want to hear it. It's going to require us to stay active. So join an organization if you're not a member in your local community. You can join many national organizations, whatever it takes to stay engaged and make sure you are keeping up to date with what's happening and why you might have to actually step outside your home with a mask, of course, to lift our voices collectively to say the will of the people is the punctuation mark here on this election.
Your Mitch McConnell idea.
Yeah, here it is. I think that if we can talk to the maintenance person at the Senate.
I already love this plan.
Already. You got me already. I'm there.
You know, have you ever noticed Mitch McConnell is kind of tallow? There's something about him that's a bit waxen. So if we can talk to the maintenance person at the Senate and have them turn the heat up just a little bit. I'm not talking about torture. A lot of people work there. But I believe that in the course of...
Wait, you believe he's like an escapee from Madame Tussauds?
Exactly. I believe that he will melt. And...
I love that idea. Listen, can I end this segment with something just super fucking cheesy?
Yeah.
All right, a friend of me forward a thing from Courtney Martin on a Substack. I'm not a Substack person. I don't know how all of that works. But anyway,
I don't know what it is.
I know it's like a thing. It's like a blogish type situation. Right. Okay. Something like that. And she runs a Substack called The Examined Family, and she wrote a prayer. And I'm just going to read you guys a few lines from this prayer. And as we close up this segment here, She wrote, "May I keep my attention on what is real, the laugh lines growing deeper around my eyes, my pencil, my children, the text from my friends with outcast tracks and dinner plans, my exhaustion, my mug of coffee. May I honor the power and slowness of generational work. This is for my grandmother. This is for my mother. This will not shift in an election cycle or even a century. It's not on time, but it's in time." And I think that really goes back to Dorian's point about this is a young democracy. We had it wrong for so many years. It took us how many years to fucking fix that shit? So it might take some more years, but either way, we're always a work in progress. Even if you move into a brand new house and everything is perfect and new, after a few years, the hinges need to be replaced. And so we just need to remember, we always need to be on the lookout for the fucking hinges.
Mm. Or the Democrats trying to take that house.
fucking, that's how a metaphor gets stolen, folks. And so, that's the cheesy thing I wanted to share. This prayer online made me cry. So if you want to go look at it and cry. If you want to go look at it and cry, go for it. Okay, so we're going to...
I'm just going to watch Brian's song Paula. Again, but thanks. Have you...
We're going to take a quick break and we're going to hear about our sponsors. And then when we come back, we'll talk about other things. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year. using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Today's show is sponsored by Paired. Basically, Paired is a relationship app for couples. You and your partner download the app, pair together every day, and then Paired gives you questions, quizzes, and games to have fun and to stay connected and deepen your conversations. And my God, is this a fun app? Speaking as someone who is in a couple, I believe that this is an incredibly fun app, also like illuminating about your relationship. Recently, a Paired question came to us: what makes you feel lucky in your relationship? And we kind of had very similar responses to this, which is that like, we don't really like bicker or argue, like certainly not publicly, like the general vibes are good. And we as parents, especially parents who go to a lot of playgrounds and a lot of like school functions and stuff like that, do see couples who bicker a lot and do see couples who like just seem like they're on the edge. You know what I mean? And we both had kind of a version of this answer, which was that like, that is not how it, like if you were to step outside and like see us having a conversation, like you wouldn't feel that way. And we felt very lucky about that just because we spend so much time with other parents for whom that's not necessarily the case. I don't mean to talk junk about other parents. Anyways, but there you go. It was a really just fun and just like sweet, like realization about our relationship. And there's just so many more things that the app does. There's these games, there's quizzes, there's like the managing jealousy quiz or the emotional intelligence quiz, which I think, again, just illuminating about, but what the other person is thinking instead of just kind of like wondering what the other person is thinking. I think a lot of like a lot of relationships are based on like not exactly knowing and guessing. And then, you know, you do something like answer a paired question or do a paired quiz. And then you're like, oh, I'm not guessing anymore. This is weird. This is new. This is cool. So I don't know. I think it's awesome. And here's what I think you should do. Whether you're just a few dates in or you've been together a long time, it's time to lighten the mood and just have fun with your partner by using Paired. So head to paired.com/fakethenation. And that's Paired, paired.com/fakethenation. And you'll get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription. Again, that's paired.com/fakethenation to sign up today. Connect with your partner every day using Paired. A happier relationship starts here. And we are back and we're ready for the next topic. And the final topic. Things are crazy. We're in the middle of a world historic election inside of a global pandemic. And it is unpleasant. So I want to talk about feel-good movies that kind of make you turn your brain off. And first, I just want to ask you both, what is your definition of a feel-good movie? Because we looked at a list at The Atlantic, and some of the movies for me seemed like crazy. So what categorizes a feel-good movie for you, Paula?
I don't know how to articulate it, but Shoah.
Wait, what?
Let's see. Old Yeller. Brian's Song, I mentioned earlier.
Sophie's Choice.
Yes, exactly. The musical. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. I'm into this thing where I just can't stop watching Breaking Bad over and over again.
Oh.
My favorite film in the whole world is Mary Poppins.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
What is it about Mary Poppins that make, is it, so it's something that you revisit frequently?
Mentally. Because in real life, I just can't stop watching Breaking Bad over
okay,
and over
again. Don't but, ask who knocks. I am the one who knocks.
Because it's so uplifting. That's the thing. See, because then whenever you have a friend who gets cancer and they don't turn to manufacturing meth, you're so proud of them. There's an uplifting place. And if anybody can find optimism in anything, it's the two of you. What do I love about Mary Poppins?
I know, we're such fucking fucks. We can find optimism in anything.
Oh, my God. It's like having tea with Shirley Temple right now. two-headed Shirley Temple. Okay, I like the colors. I like I love the music. I like the story. I like the magic. I like that technically, now they make some amazing movies using computer,
right,
whatever it is that they do. I don't really understand it. But you think about it, they didn't have that back then. And the stuff where they jump into the sidewalk pit, it's amazing.
Yeah, that bitch had to actually fit all those things in a bag and then pull them out. Impossibly.
How did she get that lamp in there?
I mean, right?
And I think that the dancing on the rooftops, the step in time, I think that dance scene.
Now, let's talk about, for just a quick moment, the accent of one Dick Van Dyke in Mary.
Never bothered
Mary
me
Pop.
At all. I guess it is not...
perhaps the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard out of someone's spoken mouth.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. So you were tripped up by that and not by Mary Poppins having a tall lamp in her bag? Do you see what I'm saying? It doesn't matter. It's a magical film. You don't stop and go, well, the accent wasn't good. I know that some people do, but I just think it's just beautiful in every way.
Wow. And you know what's really interesting about that, Paula? What's interesting is that, first of all, you put Mary Poppins and Breaking Bad in the same sentence.
That's amazing.
I mean, well done on those mental gymnastics.
Whereas I would never watch Breaking Mary Poppins. I just wouldn't do it.
That's a sequel. That's, I need to see Mary Poppins selling meth.
That's
which
where
has
the
been decriminalized in Oregon.
The nanny work runs out and she starts manufacturing meth with little Michael Banks. It's an ugly story.
But seriously, I know I just like made myself remember this, but in a couple of things about the election that we didn't get to talk about, but Arizona, New Jersey, Montana, South Dakota all voted to legalize marijuana, which I thought was very interesting, especially out of South Dakota and Montana.
So what's your favorite weed movie?
Ooh, you know, I can't even say that I'm familiar with the entire oeuvre. I mean, is Fast Times at Ridgemont High considered a weed movie?
Let's count it, yeah.
I mean, I would maybe give it to that. I don't feel like you... Okay, I'm going to go ahead and say something controversial, which is that I believe that... Knocked Up is a weed movie because of the supporting characters were so stoned a lot, like very stoned.
I was thinking The Big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah. That's also, oh, yeah, of course.
The Dude.
Yeah. That's a good one. Is that one of your feel-good movies?
No, on a day like today, I like feel-good movies are movies where there's a winner. And there's like a David and Goliath and David wins. So, you know, I woke up this morning and Black Panther was on my mind. Because seriously.
Oh, my God.
You know, this is awful. Yes. I still haven't seen it.
Oh, you got to see it. Now you got to see it. Now you got to see it.
I think like, I even have it here somewhere.
There's a winner.
There's a winner. Or, you know, frankly, I still like The Lion King. And
the new version?
The new one's all right. No. I still like the original one. Come on. Because in both of those movies, there is... For the protagonist, there is a struggle, right? It's not just totally Hollywood and like fairy tale-ish, like, oh, people just roam through life and never have a problem. There's like a struggle. And it takes work for the winner at the end, right? In terms of Simba at the end of The Lion King, who becomes the king, right? After a struggle.
Right.
So I do like movies with a clear winner, usually a David beats Goliath. I'm a fan of James Bond because they're just kind of cheeky and he always like wins, but he gets the shit beat out of him or hopefully one day she. But there's like a winner, right? And it's like...
Yeah.
So anyway, you see the theme here. Of course, one of my all-time favorites is Coming to America with Eddie Murphy,
oh,
of course, and Arsenio Hall. Oh my goodness. If you like New York, it's like a New York story. It's so funny. I think it's one of the most underrated movies of the last 30 years.
Although, I mean, it's definitely in the canon of comedic films.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say, Paula? Coming to America is...
I never saw it. I can't say.
Oh my God, what is happening? She's only seen two things, Mary Poppins and Breaking Bad. That's it.
You know, I have OCD. And so when I see, sometimes when I see something, especially because you don't have to go to the theater to see it, you just can watch it on a disc. The repetition becomes a bit of a problem for me. So, for a long time when I would work the road years ago, until a few months ago, come to think of it, I would request in the hotel room a VCR, and I did it up until the time when the hotels would say we don't have one. and by the way, they did. It's not like they threw it away. They did. I would say to them, it's in the back. No, behind the cleaning stuff. It's there. And they did have it. But I used to watch the VHS of Perry Mason's over and over again. I mean, I can tell you not just who did it. I can tell you when Perry's going to inhale. I've literally seen them thousands of times.
Memorizing lines and inhalation points is one of the hallmarks of the feel-good genre. Can I tell you guys my Ryan Coogler Black Panther story?
Please.
I may have mentioned this on the show before. I don't know. So apologies if you've already heard this, guys. It's been 4 years. I've said a lot of things. Who knows what I've re-said. I met Ryan Coogler. We had lunch once with a couple of mutual friends, and we were at the TED conference, and I had just given a TED talk. It doesn't matter. I just live a fabulous life. So we were in Vancouver, and he was there for the conference. And so we're having this lunch, and we're just like exchanging sort of, and it was two musicians. Our mutual friends were two musicians, and we're exchanging like war stories about stuff. And then I had no idea who he was. He was just introduced to me as Ryan. Like, this was before Black Panther, but it was after Creed, so sort of kind of known. But I was just introduced to him as Ryan, like, this is Ryan, hey. And then I was like, what are you working on these days? And he goes, Black Panther. And of course, this was big news even before the movie came out. Like, everybody was anticipating this movie. And I was like, oh, is it a period piece? and he sort of smiled because he realized like I didn't have any fucking idea. And he was like, no, it's like a Marvel movie. He was so nice about it. And I was just like, okay, right. Oh, and then I was just like, and then I was just embarrassed and weird. So then we're like exchanging more stories about comedy or whatever. And I'm still, and Paula, I don't know, obviously Paula is like a fucking giant in the field, but I think, and even though I've been a professional comedian for a while now, I still feel like I'm in the trenches, right? Everything still feels like, because we still go to clubs and we'll still get paid ridiculously small amounts for some of the work we do as part of the process of doing clubs. You'll get just paid dollars worth, right? And I had just done a show where the payment was very strangely $11. And it was a few days before this lunch, and I was just telling him stuff about stand-up that he didn't know, like, the ins and outs of the field. And I was just like, yeah, I just did a gig. I got paid $11, And he was just like, oh. And he was so sad for me. And he was like, listen, I got lunch.
I got this. I'm about to be a millionaire. I got it.
And he totally pays for it. And I was like, oh, no. I mean, look, yeah, it's like a humiliating number. But, like, it's just part of the process. It's just like what happens, It's okay. But I was like, but I will still also take a free lunch. Thank you. So anyways, I thought it was so cute and cool, how cute and cool he was.
He probably internalized that story, so that now he knows if he goes to lunch, he'll just tell, like, I just did a gig for $11, and then he gets a free lunch. people are like, really?
Right. It's paying it forward, except for extortioning
just part of the process,
it forward.
Man. You do a job for $11. It's just part of the process. Oh my God.
Well, I want to run by a couple of movies that were, the Atlantic had a list of feel good movies, and some of them I thought, I was like, what? Like, here's one of them that I thought didn't make any sense to me. A movie called Bridge of Spies, a Spielberg movie from 2015. I was like, huh? I first of all have really barely heard of this movie.
I never heard of this movie.
Never heard of that
movie. It's on an Atlantic list of feel-good movies. To be fair, the writer said, you know, some of these movies aren't going to make sense to you. And there's one that doesn't make sense. One movie that truly, I want to just say for everybody out there, the movie High Fidelity. It's a 2000 movie by Stephen Frears with John Cusack. And I mean, I sort of turn to John Cusack for a lot of those moments where I just need a familiar face and one that I had a crush on as a child.
I know what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. Right? John Cusack, if you're out there listening to the show, I know you're a fan. Yeah, I don't know. He's not a fan. He's never heard of me.
He's been seeking you like a Disney movie with a prince and a princess. He's been
and he wants to buy you lunch.
Yeah, he's been going house to. He wants
to
give you
a story about an $11 fee that's going to move him. There was another movie that was on this feel good list, which I want to say, my husband. It's Magic Mike XXL 2015, directed by Gregory Jacobs. Now, look, my husband is, you know, former football player, but also an actor. So he's just like a. In touch with his feelings, but also very athletic. And he like gleefully agreed to watch this movie with me. And I think that wins some sort of a husband award because the main feature
of the movie. Did
he reenact
any scenes for you?
I mean, I can't talk about what happens in the privacy of our bedroom. But it's funny because the main feature of this movie is watching a lot of like crotch thrusting by hot men.
Really?
But it's... Have you not
seen
it?
Yeah, it's a male stripper movie.
I haven't seen it.
It's a male stripper movie.
I haven't seen any of these movies.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder I don't feel good. I can't.
I need to give you a list.
I can't. I haven't seen the right movies.
Do you watch rom-coms? Like just straight up Sleepless in Seattle and...
Never saw that.
And You've Got Mail. And
never saw that.
Anything with Meg Ryan.
I've seen, wasn't Meg Ryan in the Billy Crystal movie?
Yes, there it is.
What's that one called?
When Harry Met Sally.
When Harry Met Sally.
I saw that. Sometimes late at night I'll watch Patton.
What?
Wait, the comedian or the movie?
Yeah, the comedian or the...
No, the movie.
The movie, as in General Patton.
Yeah.
No wonder you're not optimistic.
Guys, I just want to say, please don't look to Paula Poundstone for feel-good recommendations. Yeah. She clearly doesn't know what she's talking about.
Well, what I've been trying to do with a lot of these films is get the rights to them so that I can make it into a Broadway musical the way they've done a lot of movies.
So I'm trying
to do Patton the musical.
And, well, like Dorian, who likes to have a clear hero in the movie that wins... Yeah. I like to have a hero in the movie, and I want that hero to be love, and I want love to win, which is why I'm totally drunk. I know, I'm such a disgusting
human being. That doesn't sound like Magic Mike to me, though.
No, especially not the second Magic Mike, which is just like a meandering mess.
There was more than one Magic Mike?
I was just
going to
ask the same question. Wait, there was a sequel?
Oh, my God.
There was two Magic Mikeses, or Mike-I, if you want to pluralize it that way. Folks... Please tell Paula Poundstone what she should be watching because she's been watching all of the absolutely incorrect things. But please do seek out Dorian for some excellent suggestions. I want to end the show. Thanks so much for joining me on this very ridiculously uncertain and confusing and jittery day. Can you say briefly something for listeners here at the end that is going to keep you going for however long this tabulation lasts?
Drink. Smoke a J.
We were both waiting for more in that sentence, and then it was just a straight up period. Drink.
Yeah.
Tequila is my drink of choice.
His messaging was so good.
You know, when and there's some new states, as we talked about, where recreational marijuana is legal. Like,
hey!
Do what you need to do. That's all in the category of self-care. Take care of yourself first, and then we have to collectively take care of our democracy.
Yeah, I love
those
that.
Those are not good self-care ideas. Let me just
Paula,
say
what
that.
Is your good self-care idea?
The last thing you need to do in the midst of all this stress is wake up in the morning and not know what you did the night before. That's not helpful.
I love it.
By the way, Cool Hand Luke, that's a feel-good film.
Hey, people love that movie. Yeah, there it is.
I do love that movie. And they die in the end. It's so uplifting. I hope I didn't wreck it for anybody.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big advocate of drinking water and walking. I have to confess, I don't really like water that much, and I hate to walk. But I do both, partly because I have two big dogs. For God's sakes, say hello to one another.
You know, say hello to one another.
When I'm walking down the street,
hello to one another.
There's a lot of foot traffic in Santa Monica right now because a lot of people have dogs. And you're always jockeying for positions so that you can stay away from people, you know, 6 feet. And so that your dogs don't go after each other because dogs feel insecure on leashes when they encounter one another. And so you're always sort of moving around, looking for a way to be so that you're not right up beside somebody. But that doesn't mean that you can't, and we can't just smile at each other because we have masks on. So you have to go to the trouble of saying,
hello. Say hello.
Hey, how you doing? How's it working for you right now? It's so important. So
that's really beautiful. And I would love for the people of Fake Nation to be able to follow you and all the stuff you do. Dorian, where do they do that?
At Dorian Warren on Twitter.
Dorian Warren on Twitter, and
I'll bet
definitely
that's
do
an
that.
Optimistic
obviously,
site.
Oh, Fake the Nation approved optimism feed. Paula Poundstone, where do they follow you?
Well, you know, I do goofy Twitter, just at Paula Poundstone. But you know what? Go to my website. There, it is a comedy. It's a survival kit. I started making a lot of videos when the pandemic first hit, just trying to get people through. And you get the idea. My podcast, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, is on there, and I have another mini podcast called The Weekly French Trump Press Conference, where I am French Trump. And the reason I am French is that I can't do a good Trump impression. And so I do him with a bogus French accent. But I have reporters that ask me questions as French Trump. And it's 10 or 12 minutes of a lot of fun.
That sounds wonderful. Everyone should be looking and subscribing and following. But you guys know where to find me. I'm on all of the things. And I have a bunch of pieces out that I've been tweeting. So look at my Twitters if you want to see some of my work in Progressive Magazine or Far Magazine or I don't know. I've written a couple of other things I can't remember right now. But I really want to thank the production team here at Fake the Nation. That's our producer, Anita Flores, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens. Gabby Alter wrote our theme music. Lily Fleshler helps with research. And we love to hear from you, as you know. Send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas you might have. Leave us a voicemail at 331-901-0005 or drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. If you like what you hear, please favorite Fake the Nation on Stitcher, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because that really helps people find the show. Thank you, everybody, and we'll be back in your earballs next week.